A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 174. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about Randall and Hopkirk deceased. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Randall and Hopkirk Deceased is a classic 1960s show. It's a mixture of a sort of tough Private Eye show, but it has a supernatural element, which is the fact that his partner is a ghost.
This one is definitely more supernatural than sci-fi, but it's fun stuff.
Okay, and it showed on ITV. It ran from 1969 to 1970. Just one series of 26 episodes. They're about 50 minutes long. And we have to note for our US listeners that you may remember this show was broadcast under a different title in North America, where it went out as My Partner the Ghost, apparently.
Yes, that's right. And it definitely gave us a nice 1960s detective show with the supernatural elements and a good bit of quirky humor thrown in there as well that worked pretty well, but it definitely had a mix of the serious and the humor in it.
Okay, so the setup of the show.
So the setup of the show was with Jeff Randall and Marty Hopkirk, who are partners in this private investigation firm. They're both working as these private eyes. And in the first episode, the very first episode, Marty Hopkirk gets too close to the truth of one of the cases they're investigating, and he's murdered for it.
That's right, yes. He's bumped off in the first episode, but of course he returns from the grave as a ghost to help his ex-partner Jeff Randall solve the case and avenge his murder. And we're told in the first episode this is sort of meant to be a one-off arrangement, but because things don't quite go the way Marty Hopkirk plans, it ends up becoming a more permanent arrangement as he becomes stuck as a ghost and can't move on, as it were. So he has to stick around and help out with the rest of the detective cases.
That's right. He's left very much to his own devices as the ghost that he is. And only Randall can see him. No one else can see him. Not even his own widow can see him. And he does have some abilities or powers, if you like, that can come in useful for solving crimes. And he becomes a major part of it in that kind of role.
Okay, so the characters we've mentioned already, but we'll go through them in a bit more detail. We've got Marty Hopkirk, played with a certain amount of sort of humour, I think, by Kenneth Cope in a very sort of nice performance. He's the sort of the fun side of this show because he's a wise cracking character. In his ghost appearance, obviously he's dressed in this immaculate white suit with the white shirt, white shoes, white tie. Everything is white apart from his rather startling shock of jet black hair. So he does certainly stand out for us, Brian.
Yes, he's quite a striking character visually and can be sort of very serious about things, but always with a twinkle in his eye and always with lots of humor coming in. Jeff Randall was played by Mike Pratt, and he's the really sort of tough, no-nonsense, slightly scruffy Private Eye type character, fitting into a bit of that 1960s Private Eye archetype. And his interactions with Hopkirk are sort of the central element that the show is built around.
That's right. Their partnership sort of drives things along. It's great fun because you've got, as you say, the no-nonsense Jeff Randall and then the slightly zany, funnier Marty Hopkirk. And it works very well.
And everyone will accuse Jeff Randall of being distracted or confused or losing his sanity or what have you, because he talks to Hopkirk and no one else can see Hopkirk there.
Yes, absolutely. There are moments when he appears to be talking to himself. Only the audience know what's going on. So one of the main character who recurs is, of course, Marty's widow, Jean Hopkirk, played by Annette André. She takes over Marty's share of the private investigations business. So she's always around. She sometimes gets involved in cases. Very often in classic sort of 60s style, she goes undercover from time to time. And of course, she also gets into trouble. And Marty's concern for her well-being drives a lot of the stories on. And in the look of Annette André, if you've seen her, you'll recognise that sort of classic upswept blonde hairdo, very 60s looking leading lady. Although, as you pointed out earlier, Brian, there are several actresses who have that similar look in this 60s show.
Yes, they seem to like that sort of look, and there are a lot of blonde guest actresses who show up quite frequently. But Jean Hopkirk, while she's a supporting character, at times she gets a pretty good role and a pretty good deal out of it, which is nice. It's a pretty strong team of the three lead actors. There are a few other characters who show up more than once, but not that many. It's, you know, the odd police inspector shows up repeatedly and just one or two others. So really those three are the central team.
Okay, so talking about the production of this show, we have to talk about its creator, the writer Dennis Spooner. Prior to this, he'd worked on quite a number of genre shows. He'd written for The Avengers. He'd worked with Gerry Anderson and, in particular, written episodes of Thunderbirds and Fireball XL5, ITV shows. But in 1964, he'd moved over from the ITV to BBC in order to be the script editor on Doctor Who for a while.
Yes, he certainly did some strong work on Doctor Who as well.
And it was a Doctor Who connection, because it was Terry Nation, his friend, who sort of lured him back to ITV, and in particular to join the team on a ITC production called The Baron, which was one of those 1960s shows that ITC did so well, which is a sort of a troubleshooter or a super spy or some form of detective series. There's quite a few of them. I think we talked about some of them when we were doing the shows leading up to the creation of The Prisoner, but similar sort of thing.
Yes, they certainly really went for that type of show on ITC in the 60s quite a bit. So Spooner teamed up with the producer, Monty Berman, to form their own production company. And they created the series The Champions in 1968. And then they came up with this idea for having a sort of supernatural detective show. And Spooner, as a writer, was looking at other things, and he was influenced by ghost stories like Blythe Spirit and a film called Topper, and also a 1947 film called Angel on My Shoulder, which used the device of having a central character and then another character that only the central character could see, and then sort of playing with what other people would think of that and that sort of thing.
Okay, so that's how they came up with their sort of idea for this show. I think it's fair to say that they had Mike Pratt in mind for the part of the private detective straight away. And we've seen Mike Pratt crop up in other shows. I think he turned up in Adam Adamant, I seem to remember. But he was in a lot of 60s shows. And he was, as you say, he was a natural for that slightly down-at-heel very dogged private detective.
He was known for doing lots of TV guest appearances. He showed up in, you know, sort of similar style things many times during the 60s.
So after his casting, I think they quite quickly cast Kenneth Cope and Annette Andre in the other two parts, and they were straight into production. Now, obviously, for this ghostly show, one of the main effects is the appearance of the ghost, and in particular his special abilities, such as the fact that he can disappear and reappear at will, and in some occasions he can walk through walls and so on. Mostly they did these very sort of cheaply and easily, basically with jump cuts. So they would get the entire cast to freeze on stage or on set, and then they would put Kenneth Cope's character into the shot, and then they would basically, everybody would just start acting again. So a fairly sort of like easy effect, but it works quite well for this 60s show.
Yes, the actors got to be rather good at doing that without having any noticeable pause or change of tone. In some cases, they also had Marty Hopkirk appearing to be translucent, so he would be sort of see-through and walk through walls and in front of things and the like, and they used the sort of stage technique with angled glass and half mirrors and the like, so you would have his image being superimposed in, and you'd see sort of that translucent look, which looked quite good, I thought, but it was something that required a lot of setup, so they would usually limit to something like once per episode or so that it would be used. It couldn't be used extensively, but they did use it a little bit there, and it worked quite well, so that was nice to see in there. And of course, they did some other effects with wires and wind machines and that sort of thing.
Okay, we've also got, as I say, we've got Marty Hopkirk's appearance. So we've got this famous, his white suits, which were made for Kenneth Cope by some Savile Row tailors. And the whole thing, it was important to keep the suits spotlessly clean, so much so that the wardrobe lady apparently used to wait for Kenneth Cope at the edge of the set, and as soon as they'd finished filming for the day, she would make him undress on the spot, so she could put the suit away. And Kenneth Cope recalls in some of the making of documentaries that he'd be wandering around basically in his underwear as soon as filming had finished.
Yes, and they had touch-up things available and spare jackets. They really were incredibly careful about keeping the suit absolutely spotless, which I think really they did. It really did look spotless. And they also had to be careful in the lighting to avoid ever having a shadow cast over him.
Yes, it was. Yeah, they did some clever stuff with the suit and his appearance. And for the part, Kenneth Cope wore a wig. He wore a sort of jet black Beatles style wig, which rather bizarrely, apparently in the first episode, they fitted the wrong way around. So it looks a bit strange, but it does settle down afterwards. We have the shooting of the series in and around London, and quite amazing to see the streets of London in the 60s, especially the fact that they were so free of traffic. That's rather good. And another very sort of striking feature of this show is another fine title sequence with the theme music composed by Edwin Astley. And basically the title sequence recaps, I suppose, Marty's origin story. It shows the events of his murder and then him reappearing as a ghost, which only Jeff Randall can see. So that sort of sets it up at the start of each episode quite nicely.
Yes, they had a couple of versions of the title sequence, and I think in both cases it sort of recapped parts of the first episode to set that up. It was broadcast starting in September 1969. The dates and broadcast orders, as they often did, varied from region to region within the ITV network. But it was all sort of around then, 1969, 1970, that these 26 episodes were initially broadcast.
Yes, we've said this time and time again, but these ITC programs broadcast on the ITV network often, the different regions showed them at different times and different orders. And perhaps because of that, we have 26 more or less standalone episodes. each one is a story of itself without too much continuity from one to another.
There are one or two cases where you get a couple episodes that should be in a certain order, and you know, you want the first episode first. But yes, for the most part, there is really very little that requires any particular order. Though I think the order they have on the DVD set is a good one.
Tell them we're not interested. I don't know how long I'll be, Jeannie, but I'll give you a ring as soon as I get there.
Oh, don't worry, Jeff. I'll take care of things this end.
Morning, Jeff. Don't say anything. Jeannie will think you're talking to yourself. Isn't she lovely? And so efficient, too. Except she still can't spell. There's only one F in reference.
So there's only one F in reference.
What a strange thing to say. How can you possibly see it from over there? And I have to.
Everybody spells reference wrong. Look, I must rush. I've got to get to Craig's Village by this evening.
But, Jeff...
Late as it is. Bye. Be good.
We should talk about the availability of this show. Fortunately, it is out there. So in Region 2, we have a box set with all the 26 episodes. And actually, this box set is quite stuffed with extras. I mean, recently we've been seeing some very plain DVD releases, but this one's quite good, I think, Brian, because we've got a couple of extra features, a making-of documentary, another documentary about Mike Pratt. We've got some behind-the-scenes footage. We've got a couple of other films or episodes. So we have that 1947 film Angel on My Shoulder, which sort of inspired Dennis Spooner because it had this device of a character talking to the hero that nobody else could see.
That's actually a full feature-length film from 1947.
And that's, as I say, included in the extras, so that's quite good. Plus, we've got an episode from another sort of early 60s show called The Man in Room 17, and it's an episode that featured Mike Pratt.
Featured him in rather a small role, but he's certainly there, and it's a very good episode of that series, so it's neat to see.
Okay, and there's some commentaries, and there is some extensive notes in two production notes booklets by the TV historian Andrew Pixley. So it's all good stuff. Here in Region 2, that's available on Amazon currently for £23. Not on any of the rental sites apart from Love Film, I believe. I think it's on Love Film, but you won't be able to find it on Netflix or iTunes at the moment. However, in Region 1...
There is a DVD set in Region 1, but it's a Part 1 that has the first 13 episodes, and it was never followed up with a Part 2. So you can get half of the series in Region 1, which is still floating around in places on Amazon and that sort of thing for about $17 or so. But if you want to see the whole series, I think you'll have to import the Region 2 version for $72 on Amazon.com, or you can, of course, just import it from Amazon.co.uk. Amazon.ca in Canada has it for about $50 for Part 1 and $116 for the Region 2 box set. So, as is often the case, you're better off going to the American or British Amazon sites.
Okay, so slightly more expensive to get hold of in Region 1. At the moment, at the time of recording, the first episode seems to be up on YouTube. So if you do want to just get a flavour of this show, you might be able to catch it there. But as ever, these things get taken down quite frequently. And here on British Invaders, we're all for buying the actual DVD release if there is one. And as I say, it's a pretty comprehensive box set. Quite a good one this time.
Yes, it has about a disc and a half of extras. And there's some good stuff in the extras. And the episodes themselves are nicely restored and look very good. So next time, we will talk a little more about the show and give you more of a flavor of some of the episodes and some of the guest actors who showed up. Lots of great 1960s actors showing up on this one.
Yes, that's right. There's a whole host of 60s familiar faces and names to spot in this show. But also we'll get to the 2000s and in particular to the remake that starred Vic and Bob. And I know some of you will be wanting to hear about that. Plus, we'll get to our own views about this show and give you our recommendations about both this box set and the remake.
Very good. Lots of stuff to talk about next time. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. We are part of The Geek Culture Network, so you can find us at TheGeekCultureNetwork.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find us there.
You can also search for us and find us on the Voice of Geeks streaming radio network at VogNetwork.com, where British Invaders is one of many geek-featured type podcast shows. We go out on Mondays and Tuesday nights, but there's lots of other related content there as well.
Absolutely, some good stuff there. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, this is Eamon in England also signing off.